Good morning. That is too dead for me. I'm like Patrick Patterson. Good morning. That's a lot better. All right. Hi, I'm Joe Jones. I am with the Center for Urban Families in Baltimore, and I'm pleased to have join me today my good friends and colleagues from Oklahoma, Jay Otaro, and with him is a family from Oklahoma, David and Nina Sanderson, right? And from Baltimore, I'm pleased to have with me a couple from our Building Strong Families program, Kendra Fisher and Brian Carson. I also like to introduce folks who are here with me from the Center for Urban Families. You'll hear later from Ms. Cassandra Coach Johnson. Also with me is Ms. Danielle Terrain, who is Director of Program Planning and Evaluation, and Mr. Will Davis, who is head of our Couples Employment Program, which we have now called Partners for Success. I'd like to tell you briefly a little bit about the Center for Urban Families. The way in which we approach our work is in three different practice domains. One, work with low income, and I'm challenged by using the word low income, but low income dads who are disconnected or may be at risk from being disconnected from their children, help them to make that connection and manage the relationship with the child's mother. And the center of what we do is our Family Services Division, working with couples who are trying to figure out the best ways to build their families. And at the end of what we do is our employment services, where we help all of the folks who come through our door who are interested in exploring the world of work to figure out a way how to get there and to move up the wage scale. We also have a policy office, again headed by Ms. Danielle Terrain, that focuses on our public policy and advocacy work. For me, it's critically important that any time that we have any kind of discussion like this, that it is grounded by the lives of real people. I think, you know, if you want real healthy public policy, you've got to have a partnership, a healthy partnership between policy, research, and practice. And it's no different than if you want to have a healthy relationship or you want children's outcomes to be better, you have to have a healthy mom and a healthy dad working together. So the first panel was the research, and this panel is the practice, and we have a healthy relationship. Let me first turn to Jay and ask if he would briefly, describe and talk about the Family Expectations Program in Oklahoma.
Thank you. And thank you for giving me a moment to talk about Family Expectations, which we call in Oklahoma FE. So if you hear me say FE, I'm referring to Family Expectations. Family Expectations is operated by Public Strategies, Inc. Out of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And it's one of the many continuing efforts under the Oklahoma Marriage Initiative that is managed by PSI. We are involved in two national demonstration research studies. One is the Building Strong Families Project, and the second one is the Supporting Healthy Marriage Project. Building Strong Families is for unmarried couples, and the Supporting Healthy Marriage is for married couples. So we have the benefit of working with both of those populations. We've been doing so since 2005. And the eligibility requirements for coming into the random assignment study is that you have to be A, over 18, be the biological parents of the child, have just had a child or are expecting a child, had a child within the last 90 days, are low to moderate income, and have no serious family issues going on in the relationship at the time of enrollment in the program. To date, we have intaked over 2,000 couples into the program, into the study, and over 1,000 into the program. So I think the first thing it tells us is that couples are interested in marriage education, which I want to emphasize again, which is a good thing. The way we go about the work is we offer a 30-hour intensive workshop to couples. It's a couple of hours that have gone through the 30 hours of marriage education in the program, which continues with what we call ancillary workshops, which has reunions and moms groups and dads groups and team dad groups and daddy boot camp. And we also offer employment and training opportunities and a fatherhood component to the work that we do. And it's over a course of a year, actually for some longer than a year, for some shorter than a year. Once the baby's a year, then they complete the program. And some of the ancillary subjects that we teach evolve around the curriculum that they have just gone through, which is on child development and also reinforcing some of the skills they learned around communication and anger management, intimacy, child development, finances, all of the things that are important to a relationship. Beyond that, there are reunion groups that take place afterwards where couples come back after completing the core component and involve themselves in additional workshops. The couple that is with us today, which are Nina and David, will take some time to share with us a little bit about their experience with family expectations and hopefully help us to learn a little bit more how we can continue to improve on those services and affect relationships in a positive direction that we're looking for in outcomes. So.
Great. Thanks, Jay. David and Nina, just to give people a sense of, you know, what really happens in the lives of folks who are in these programs, this is a little variation on the conversation we've had to kind of prep for this, but can you help people to understand how you all heard about family expectations? But before you go there, can you tell me how you all found one another, and then tell us how you found family expectations? Who chased who?
I was the chaser. We met in the pool hall one night, and pretty much I have good skills. I was able to convince her to date me and eventually marry me, so I'll let you describe.
Well, yeah, actually we met in high school. I was a senior in high school and David had just graduated. So we had been together for about 4 years. By the time we decided to get married. Let's see, then we found out from Family Expectations. We had been married for about 2 years. We have a program in Oklahoma called Children's First. It's a program for first-time moms. A home health care nurse comes to your home on a weekly basis at some points. It depends on where you are at in your pregnancy. And they just help you understand some things about how to prepare your home for your child, what was helpful to me with that specific program was all the different referrals to different community things that would help us. And also just separating fact from myth, because as a first-time mom, you often hear all the different crazy things, and I wanted to be able to protect my child, but I didn't want to be one of those crazy moms either. So I really enjoyed the Children's First nurse who came to our home, and she referred us to the program Family Expectations. David and I had went through premarital counseling when we met as a preparation for our marriage, and we were really excited to find a program, especially one that we would get the opportunity to later participate in. We were really excited about the opportunity to interact as a family, because so many programs are just targeted for a mother and her child.
Get out of here.
I'm already nervous. Come on. But yeah, so many programs are just, and I didn't want to feel like, you know, in a marriage, I didn't want to feel like I was still just the only one
participant
raising our kids, which I have an 8-year-old stepson, and then we have our brand new daughter. So it was really positive for us to be a part of Family Expectations for that reason.
And what has it been like? Well, let me first ask David. Did you go to Family Expectations reluctantly, or were you, you know, kind of glad to go? How was that for you when you got started versus kind of after a couple of weeks or so?
The initial reaction was kind of shock, I guess. I didn't really want to go to start with. Once we started going and seeing other fathers kind of going through the same stuff, the male instructors kind of helped me relax, I guess you can say.
They had male instructors?
Yeah, we had male instructor, a male and a female. Mm-hmm. So it was extremely exciting. I enjoyed it once I relaxed, I guess you can say. It was hard for me to get into my element just because it's not something that I expected it to be. I expected it to go and just sit there and kind of sleep through it. I didn't think I was actually going to get anything from it. I thought it was just going to be, here's how you're going to push out a baby and nothing else. I didn't think we were going to learn anything about our relationship, how to build a stronger relationship, and luckily I was proven wrong. I enjoyed it and learned a lot how to cope with my relationship with my wife and children.
Now, sometimes there can be a debate whether or not to provide gifts or incentives in programs. In this case, Family Expectation does provide some gifts or incentives. And was that important to you all as a family?
For me, that was the first thing that got me to walk through the door. And
what kind of incentives?
Well, after I can't remember exactly how many hours, but after you've completed a certain amount of hours, they give you $100 between you and your spouse or significant other, just to spend on whatever you want. You got a thing called Crib Cash, which is a store they have inside Family Expectations where you get to buy all kinds of neat stuff, diapers up to cribs, anything for a baby, and then they have like DVD players for the adults, I guess you can say.
Now, Nina, things haven't always been kind of good for you all. At one point, I think you both lost employment. How was that? How did it affect you in terms of the way you were thinking about building your family, and how did you recover from it?
Well, for us, we'd had a really exciting start to our relationship after we decided to get married. I had just finished college, had a really beautiful wedding, bought a house. We thought right then that we had the whole thing taken care of because we had the house and the great jobs, and layoffs at the company I worked for caused me to lose my job. So I found a part-time job that I, after having a baby, I didn't qualify for FMLA because I worked part-time. So I didn't have my job after I had my daughter, which was stressful because you already know you have added expenses. And when my daughter was 3 months old, my husband came home also from layoffs. And we thought, okay, we still have this house. We still have these two really amazing children. And now we have no jobs. So how are we going to deal with this? But we've been through some pretty rough times. That kind of tough times tend to bond us together. And so that's what we did. We just went back to what we knew. We went back to counselors. We went back to our friends at Family Expectations and just said, this is what's going on. What can you tell us to do from here? Because whether you've been without a job yourself before, it's totally different, because whenever you have kids, you know, it's okay. I can be tough and do without, but you definitely don't want your children to go without with things that they need. So, and especially being both without jobs at the same time, it was just starting from scratch, but you do it a lot faster because you want to make a difference. You want to get that income back, and you want to be able to keep the house and maintain the lifestyle that you're trying to build and keep that steady family. So that's what we did. We went back to Family Expectations. I know that they have a dad's group. The guys there had helped David revamp his resume, just constantly trying to give him job ideas. And with me, they were really supportive. I'm a massage therapist, and I had worked for a hospital, which is a really fun job, but it's really rare in Oklahoma to have a massage therapist at your hospital. So it's not like there was a lot of jobs.
Wait a minute,
hold,
you mean to tell me that David gets free massages?
Actually, I don't like massages.
That's why I married him. I need the time off. But yeah, so they were really encouraging to me because they helped me in order what I had to do from that point, since there wasn't a high demand for more like hourly jobs, just encouragement to help teach me how to learn to build my business.
David, let me ask you, as a man, at the first panel, we heard a lot about economics and employment services and data points, but in real life, as a man, as a father, as a husband, when employment or lack of employment hit you, how do you feel? And can you talk a little bit about the process of actually going to Family Expectations as a man and having an environment that was supportive at that time?
When I originally lost my job, it was pretty much shock and awe. It was bad. Pretty much just straight panic. Didn't know what we were going to do because she was already without a job, and I was making the money at the time, so apparently that just stopped. So I went to Family Expectations and dealt with the gentleman that they call, it's kind of dad's group or team dad. It helps fathers in all aspects with children, marriage and me helped me get a good job. They helped me rebuild my resume, helped me look for jobs, helped me pretty much through everything. I got to go to a group called Team Dad where we discuss marriage, family, and just general life, how to get by. It's kind of a bonding experience because you don't just every day just go up to complete strangers and say, "Hey, I'm a dad. How are you?" And so, it's just an open, safe area where you can discuss things that you don't normally talk about in everyday life.
Now, in terms of the Family Expectations Program and the sessions that you go through, can you tell us about some of the key or core areas of discussion and how those discussions have impacted your outlook on relationships and your marriage?
Oh, definitely. The biggest thing was we went through processes of how to deal with anger and conflict. There's a thing called XYZ statement and speaker-listener. Speaker-listener is a way to talk where if we're having a conflict, or actually not even a conflict, just a discussion where I'm the speaker, she's going to listen to me, and then she's going to repeat back so I know she heard what I said, and then vice versa. But
wait a minute, hold up. Nina, who's the better speaker-listener?
Oh, this is good. I think he's probably the better listener, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, he's the
better listener. Is that before the treatment or after the treatment?
It's usually at all times. He's a really great listener, but speaker listener helps us a ton just because we are both so fiery. We can, you know, it settles an argument really quickly. And one thing I was really interested to find out in Family Expectations is they'll tell you, right before they teach you this technique, they'll tell you that most problems actually don't get solved from that. That what usually settles an argument or something going on, a conflict, is just a good discussion. And I could talk all day, so I loved that. I wanted to discuss everything, so I would have a list of all the stuff I wanted to discuss. That's why he's a good listener, because I'm a talker.
If you had an opportunity to pick the things you like most about the program, could you give us those couple of things? And then also, could you share with us if you had any suggestions on how to make the program better, what they might be?
I'd say my favorite thing was overall the after programs, the Team Dad, because it's a time where I get to go be with other dads, and it's just very enjoyable because we discuss, like I said, the children, and like our last one, we did safety, just something as simple as safe children safety, and then marriage safety. I think that and then just a lot of the activities we did during class. We had some really good educators that they made it enjoyable. So just the everyday classes were enjoyable for us. So I can't really just pick out one thing other than I'm glad we learned how to get fights over faster.
Well, what he's not telling you is they have a Wii in Dad's group. Oh, a yeah. Wii, a video game.
Nintendo that, Wii.
That's why he loves it. Oh.
Yeah, and they are always having fun. I think this next Dad's group that he's going to, they're having like the sumo wrestler dress-up outfits where they get to fight each other. So that's why he likes Dad's group, because they're weird and they get to be weird together.
And any suggestions on what might be done to make the program better?
Oh, pick me. I the one thing, the only thing I don't like about our group is you graduate after a year and you you don't get to go to the extra classes anymore. So David and I are lucky because we now work as a host couple, which means we go in and set up the food or set up the snacks or just help somebody to facilitate the classes. But you don't get to participate as much. And if it were my choice, I would rather the classes go on indefinitely for however long I wanted to go.
So this is the final question to you for this particular segment. This is a research question. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being high and 1 being low, how would you describe the impact that the sessions and the overall environment at family expectations has had on your relationship and your outlook for the success of your marriage long term?
I'd have to give it a 10. And the reason why is because when we originally started the classes, we were in a relationship, a committed relationship, but we were two people in a relationship. We weren't trying to grow as a couple. And through all the techniques we learned, it helped us to grow as a couple. So just from that, not learning anything else, I would give it a 10.
Great. Where's Bob? Bob, is that accepted in the research field as empirical research? Thank you. Before I introduce and ask to come up Cassandra Coates Johnson, let me share with you all personally how I got involved in this particular aspect of our work in healthy relationships and marriage and why I think it's important. First of all, I'll tell you, I came very reluctantly. And it goes back to the 1996 changes in welfare reform. You know, that ambiguous language around the formation and maintenance of two-parent families, and states not really having an understanding or a way in which to, you know, address that particular issue. And obviously at that time the Congress had flipped from control from the Democrats to the Republicans. In 2000, during the Bush-Gore campaign, both presidential candidates talked about responsible fatherhood as a part of their platform. And during that time, and I am still a very passionate fatherhood practitioner and a part of a very fragile field where the infrastructure of the field wasn't very, very stable. Many of the private foundations that had invested in the field began to step back. Public money was not available for the fatherhood field, and it began to regress as a field. In some cases, it was stagnant, and in some cases, people had to turn out the lights because they couldn't pay the bill. And that was very devastating to me as a practitioner. But when I started to begin to look at things on the brighter side, it's always the glass is half full and half empty. And I started thinking about the families that we serve. I saw two possible ways to look at this. One is that we have these guys who are at risk or disconnected or at risk from being disconnected from their kids, and we've got to serve them. There's no question about it. We cannot leave them off the mark, off the mat. But there's also this opportunity with new parents who have children, and the guy will be a father. So as a fatherhood practitioner, it still provides me potentially the opportunity to serve fathers through this vehicle, but it also provides the opportunity for me to help a couple to navigate this really fragile time when they're still romantic. And in the case of the families that we serve in Baltimore, there are issues around income, there are issues around housing. There's a disproportionate number of men who have been exposed to the criminal justice system. Our school systems have challenges where we have pushed people through school systems who aren't academically prepared to be successful in the world of work. And it provided me an opportunity to look at how we might take this public policy that was very, very difficult for many to embrace, particularly in a liberal community like Baltimore. And so I spent a lot of time getting to know folks in the healthy marriage community. One of my greatest friends and mentors has been Mary Myrick. Theodore Ooms and others have helped me to think through, you know, just how important it is to consider this. I've had folks like Ron Haskins, who we have political difficulties getting along, you know, from a bipartisan standpoint sometime, but he's a great friend and a great mentor. And ultimately I said, you know what, it's not about me, it's not about the cultural war that can exist, it's about folks like Nina and David and Kendra and Brian. And if I can't put my feelings and my skepticism aside for the betterment of these families, then I need to get out of the game. And as I began to think about that, and I was able to surround myself with key staff who are intellectually capable and can work any place in America, but decide to work in my organization and help us carry out this vision, it made sense for me to say, you know what, come heck or high water, and heck's not the word I really want to use, we're going to find a way to serve these guys who are disconnected from their children, who may not be in relationships at this point, but they still deserve to have the similar set of education, not counseling, but education, because ultimately they will end up in new relationships? And is it better for them to have a new set of skills going into a new relationship so that when the potential for marriage exists for them, they're in a better place to make that successful? And then we've got the population of new parents who deserve to have the kind of support that we're talking about here today so that the father is never disconnected from the child, or potentially never disconnected from the child, and he can move forward. And for me, to drill down a little bit deeper, right? The out-of-wedlock birth rate in my community is atrocious, right? One way to deal with that from a longitudinal standpoint is to work with guys in my fatherhood program to help them to understand that if they're involved in the life of their little girls, right, who we often forget when we talk about fathers, and little boys, that they can help this child to grow up healthy with the right set of values so that when they get to become adolescents and start having those hormones jump around, and they are, you know, they're going to jump around, right, that they can help their children to manage those hormones so that we can reduce unplanned pregnancies and reduce the teen birth rate so that these children have the potential to go on and be successful in school and in the world of work. And that's the way in which I've approached it philosophically and dealt with it internally within my organization and within my own relationship with my wife, who I've been married to for 18 years come May 26. Can you imagine me going home to my wife and saying, you know, I'm a little skeptical about this marriage thing, right? And so with that, let me introduce Ms. Cassandra Coates Johnson.
Good morning, everyone. Is it on? I'm going to echo some of the things that my good friend Jay has talked about in terms of what the Baltimore Building Strong Families program is. Baltimore Building Strong Families is a random assignment research evaluation demonstration project that is federally funded through the Administration for Children and Families. We are also majorly funded by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Mathematica Policy Research is the research firm that is actually tracking and doing the longitudinal research impact study on the work that we are doing. Baltimore Building Strong Families, similar to what Jay was talking about, what Family Expectations does in Oklahoma, we target low-income couples that are non-married. The mom is either pregnant, or if the baby has been born, the baby is between the ages of 0 and 3 months of age. In our communities in Baltimore City, as Joe was talking about, there are a plethora of people for us to recruit, which is why we have decided to get in this work and have been working diligently since 2005 with this project. Once the couples are enrolled, they participate in 24-week sessions with us. We utilize a curriculum called Loving Couples, Loving Children, which is designed by Drs. John and Julie Gottman. And when they spend 24 weeks with us, which equals out to about 6 months of time with us, they talk every week about different topics, as Nina and David were talking about, ranging from communication to conflict resolution skills to intimacy to how to deal with the change that a child brings into a relationship. I can testify to that. I'm a new mom of a 7-month-old with my husband. So on and so forth. So every week they come in, they are able to sit. It's a group cohort session model where they are with other couples that are in a similar station of life with them. And what we have found over the course of the last several years that doing this work, in addition to the healthy marriage education that they receive, is the tremendous sense of community that they build amongst themselves is phenomenal. Some of the incentives or things that we provide to our couples to keep them engaged, again, 6 months is a really long time to, you know, keep have couples come to participate voluntarily on a 6-month basis to get healthy marriage education with us. So we try to be innovative and come up with different things to kind of keep them engaged. Some of the things that we do in Baltimore, we provide transportation for our couples. We also provide on-site childcare so they don't have to worry about who is gonna, you know, watch their children while they come and participate with us. We do something called Village Night activities as well. And what that is to help, again, foster this sense of community that develops with these couples when they are participating in this education, and is really designed to reinforce the tools and information that they get in our group sessions. And again, I always emphasize education. We do not counsel. We provide information and education to these couples so that they can understand what a healthy marriage looks like and decide for themselves at the end of our process of what their intentions are towards each other and hopefully solidify their relationship and move towards marriage if it is something that is positive for them to do. The focus of the Center for Urban Families, formerly the Center for Fathers, Families, and Workforce Development, some of you may know that name a little better. We recently changed our name to the Center for Urban Families. The focus of our organization is to help everybody that we serve. We have responsible fatherhood programming, we have workforce development programming, and our latest venture is in healthy marriage work. We have a family services division that I am the head of. But the focus of our entire organization is to help move the clients that we serve into family stability and economic success. Those two tenets look different for every person that we serve. And especially in our couples program, what we really try to do is to figure out and help them figure out a track of what that might look like for them. As we try to grapple with and figure out how to deal with that in our Building Strong Families model, what we realize is that the marriage education that we provide is wonderful, is great, and is needed. However, there are also a set of additional supports that need to be surrounded and wrapped in healthy marriage in order for couples to achieve economic stability and family stability. Thus, Joe was always getting us into stuff, and the latest thing that we have dived into, and Joe mentioned it briefly, is a new body of work, and the program of that is called Partners for Success. And what it focuses on is employment for couples. The piece focuses on the economic portion of being in a relationship. I think Bob Learman was kind of talking about the wages going up for people that are married, those kinds of things. Well, our couples that we're dealing with are not married yet. And if it's, you know, appropriate for them to do, hopefully they will be married. So we have embarked on this body of work. It is a pilot program. It is funded through the Administration for Children and Families, and is also being qualitatively evaluated by Mathematica Policy Research. And what we are hoping to do is to take couples who have almost completed our Baltimore Building Strong Families program, as Brian and Kendra are just about finished, and actually they will be eligible to participate in our Partners for Success program. And when they go into Partners for Success, what they will be exposed to is a set of programming that talks about things from career and wage advancement to educational advancement and opportunities to housing and home ownership issues, all of that whole other not so glamorous side of being married that we all can probably relate to. So what the Center for Urban Families, is hoping to be able to do is to take the marriage education work that we're doing with Baltimore Building Strong Families, take the Partners for Success work that we're doing around couples employment, and bridge that gap between healthy marriage and this whole notion of economic stability to try to attempt to help our couples achieve just that, financial stability and economic success. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Cassandra.
Let me grab that.
So, Kendra and Brian, tell us how you all got together and how you heard about BSF, Building Strong Families, and who chased who.
Well, you heard about Building Strong Families.
No. I want to hear about how y'all got hooked up.
Well, she chased me.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm talking about, dog. All right.
I had to put her on the back burner for a minute. But, yeah, she chased me. And the way we met, we was at the Baltimore Ravens Stadium. Mm-hmm. And we was doing little concession work. And she was teaching me how to run that cash register type thing. Mm-hmm. And that's how you wound up talking. We was just, because I was being hard headed and I didn't want to listen. So she just started talking to me. And we started talking. But the way we heard about Building Strong Families was.
Hold up. You got a part to the story?
No, he was being hard headed and I ended up getting smart with him. And like, everybody else was worrying about him, how cute he was and all that. But I was the only one getting smart. And I guess he liked that. Like, he didn't like too many females pushing up on him. So I was always getting smart. And yes, he was hard-headed, but He came to his senses.
Whoa. Okay. Okay. Now. Okay. Don't rebut. How did you all hear about Building Strong Families? How did you get connected?
Well, she's in the marching band. Uh-huh. And somebody in the marching band referred us to Christina. All
right. Okay.
I know Christina. Yeah. And like 2 weeks later, she came to our house and gave us the little interview thing, and we just decided to go from there.
So one of our family coordinators came. So a friend of our family coordinator, you knew or you came in contact with, and they told you about a little bit about the program, and the family coordinator explained the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how was it when you heard about this program, were you skeptical? Like I was skeptical about marriage from the beginning.
I was very skeptical because I thought it was gonna be like on TV, like Montel Williams type show or something like that. Like I was really skeptical about it, but when I got in there, it was pretty cool. You know what I'm saying? Everybody was down to earth and. Like, it's when I got in there, like, everybody just seemed like they worked with you.
What was it like for you, Kendra?
Well, that program, you learn a lot. And I think it's one way that you can improve your relationship. Like, if you can choose to take the advice or you don't take it. And I felt as though I wanted to take the advice because your relationship can never be too perfect. And it was an extra step, you know, to improving our relationship.
So you're not married, correct?
Yeah.
But you, the two of you have a baby, and
yes.
Breon, yeah. And Breon is how old?
8 months.
Okay, and you're currently pregnant now, right?
Yes.
Okay, so can you talk a little bit about being in the sessions and what that's been like? What have you gotten from the sessions, and has it helped your relationship in any way?
Yes. For example, one of the modules that we were doing was compromising. And, like, in the beginning of the relationship, we had trouble, you know, coming to decisions and agreeing with a lot of things. But as we went through the sessions and we began to talk about compromising, we learned to actually sit down and talk to each other, you know, come to an understanding, whereas though it don't go to a physical fight, you know, or verbal fight or anything. So we just learned how to actually talk to each other without everybody yelling and having everybody in our business and everything.
So who compromises better?
Me.
Yeah, so, that's true.
So she has compromising skills now?
Yes.
Okay.
Real good skills.
Now, the two of you live with your mom.
Yes.
Right, and not too long ago, you were working, and what happened?
Well, they laid me off because I was they was running, like they was like the company I was working for. They was laying people off because they didn't have no work, and I happened to be one of the people that got laid off, and that was kind of hard for me because not have a son, a family,
mm-hmm.
not have a family, that kind of made me like. Like, I was always down. I always wanted money, like, because I needed to have money to take care of my family. So I was always down. I was always complaining. I needed a job. Then I go find go out there and search for a job. And when nobody want to hire me. And, you know, I don't know. It was just hard, so.
And you don't have a criminal background.
No, I have no criminal background.
So even with a high school diploma.
And a high school diploma.
And in this economy, it was just really difficult for you to get connected to employment, and you've got a family, and you're living in the house with your lady and her mom.
Right.
Man, that's tough. Yeah, right. That's hard, man. Okay. All right. Now, but things have flipped around.
Right. Things flipped around now. And now
how
I got,
so?
Well, now I got a job. I start Monday. Thank you. Yeah. I was driving the bus, well, not a bus, but like a transport, what's it called?
Mobility.
Yeah, the mobility buses, like transporting the elderly people and, you know, take them where they gotta go and stuff like that. So that made out pretty good. So,
now we heard a little bit from Nina and David a little bit about the services. We heard a little bit from you all about the services within the program. But Cassandra and I have kind of talked about this whole notion of couples employment attached to what you've been getting in the marriage education classes, right? And can you talk a little bit about the services in couples employment, what that's been like for you so far?
Well, so far we've been working with Mr. Will Davis and Mr. Cooper, and we've been working on the Partners for Success Guide, which is one step towards reaching our dreams and goals. And we sat down and talked to them, and it was like a clear understanding of how they can help us, you know, and what they would like to help us with. So I think it's a really good program, and it's real nice. So I hope, well, I try to give the advice to friends and families and let them know it's a good program, especially if you want extra help, you know.
Have you started working on your plan?
Yes.
Together?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's that like?
I think it's better, and it's a lot easier than, you know, he trying to do one thing and I'm trying to do another, and when we can just work together and it'll be better. And, you know, when you work together, it's a lot easier than working separate, and it's a lot harder because neither one of y'all can figure out what to do, and then both of y'all be running around like a chicken with your head cut off. So I think it's a lot better when you work together.
So you had talked to me a little bit about your aspirations to get married. Can you share with folks your thinking about what that means for you?
I think getting married would be a lot easier, especially financially wise, because everybody, well, you and your partner can work together rather than both of y'all having your own, you know, like he have his money, I have my money, when we can work together and it's more. You know, we can take care of the babies together, then he on his own and I'm on my own. That's a lot harder than, you know, it would be when you're together.
Final question for you all. Just thinking about this notion of being in these couples education sessions, talking about relationships, talking about healthy marriage, you know, thinking about building your own strong family. When you go back home, though, to your home and to your neighborhood, to your friends and your family members, do you often talk about what you all have experienced in the program, and what kind of reaction do you get?
Yes, I talk to my friends and family all the time. And once I explain it to them and tell them how good the programs are, they like, what's the number? Can we call? You got a card for them? And like, it's one couple that I grew up with, and like, they really, really wanted to be in the program. And I guess they wasn't like eligible for it. But I still go home, share the cards that we receive, all the information and advice that we receive. I still go home and share it with them. And it looks like to me that their relationship turned out better than what I thought it would, because I share the advice that I receive to them.
So Cassandra should be paying you for that, shouldn't she?
Yeah, she should.
We want to spend some time. We wanted to get people out of here by 10:30, but we also had the room until 11, I believe, and we want to give people an opportunity to ask some questions of the couple and to the other panelists. So I would ask Patrick, Mary, and Ron if they could join me up with the couples and just have an open dialogue for the time that we have remaining, for as long as you all can stay, and start taking questions as folks come up. Oh, come on, Ron. Mary? Come on. Questions? Robin?
I'd like Brian to respond to that last question about relating to people in the community and friends, sort of the potential skepticism that might
Some of my friends I talked to, they kind of skeptical about it, like I was in the first, like in the beginning. They think it's a phony. They think how can I help your relationship? Like, I be trying to explain it to them, but they don't get it through their head. So I just say, forget it. But a lot of my friends, they really like they really think it'll help them in the long run. And they want to get in, but they can't because they're not with their spouse or whatever like that. So,
do they seek a long-term healthy relationship?
Some of them, not all of them, because some of them hard headed like I was. So,
I'd like to ask you Ryan and Kendra a question. Is there any pressure? This is a question that comes up a lot, especially about people who worry about these folks. Do you feel there's any pressure? Do you feel like you're under any pressure to get married? That the program is really putting pressure on you to get married? It's important for you to get married and so forth. Do you feel that pressure, or is it not?
No.
Not at all.
I thought getting married was, you know, at your own risk. Like, at your own, like, you know.
Boy, I was afraid of the answer, boy. Mary, can I ask you a question? And you've gotten a chance to travel around the country to many of the sites. Can you give folks a sense of maybe 2 to 3 years ago, the capacity of organizations to understand and actually do this work versus where programs kind of are now and what's needed to move forward to kind of, you know, solidify the success of what the potential is?
Certainly, there are a lot of programs who are now delivering healthy marriage services, and I think what's happened over the last couple of years is really people are beginning to understand better even the integration of these healthy marriage programs into other entities and other services. So as people are beginning to learn how to deliver them, they're also learning how to partner with other organizations so that they can build their capacity and build some sustainability for their efforts. So I think that's a good step. The Resource Center actually will be doing a Promising Practices Guide by late this fall, so we're trying to work with the Annie Casey Foundation to document, particularly with low-income families, about what's working, what we're learning, and hopefully be able to use those lessons to help other programs be more successful. So a lot of people trying lots of different things, and the programs are working a lot with each other and learning from each other now, and it's now that there are enough people doing it, people are able to benefit by learning from one another. I think that's really helping move the field forward much more quickly and in a more stable way.
One here and then two here.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions. Do you think that family economic success could or should be added to Kristen's 10-point definition of healthy marriage? And I think that with the point that healthy marriage is benefit everyone along the economic spectrum, do you foresee couples, working class, middle class couples, having access to these types of tools, and how would that look?
Well, one, I think it's absolutely critical that we figure out how to integrate these types of services, healthy marriage and employment services. Obviously, you know, people who have limited income, it's much more important to you. If you are of such an economic means, you know, you may still need the education, but you've got the financial wherewithal to weather a financial storm. But, you know, if a relationship is rocky, you still can use the education, educational part of it. And so for us, the Family Stability and Economic Success framework is critical to what we do as an organization, and we're strategically moving towards that course. Relative to other family types, I think it's also important. I know that I think I saw Carol Thompson come in, and I know that there's maybe some other folks from the Casey Foundation, and one of the things that Casey, and you should talk more with Carol about this, their whole portfolio on asset development as it relates to vulnerable families is critically important to what we do. And, in addition to what we do at the Center for Urban Families and the funding we receive from Mathematica via ACF, our other co-funder is the Annie Casey Foundation. So we're able to take advantage of the resources and the talent in Carol's shop, as well as in the shop of her colleague, Bob Galoff, in their workforce development portfolio. So that's hugely important that those resources and that information and that intellectual capital be available to healthy marriage programming. And I think that In a couple of weeks or next month, there is actually going to be a whole discussion that the Healthy Marriage Resource Center is going to be leading at Wingspread in Wisconsin. So there's a continuing set of activities. There's also some other work underway at HHS looking at the way in which marriage education asset development is attached to this conversation. So I think there's some movement with intellectual folks at the table, with practitioners at the table, the healthy relationship I talked about, that will lead to the kind of policies that need to be tweaked in order for us to sustain this work, really in a bipartisan way, because if we leave this to one party versus the other, it's going to do damage to families, and we can't have that.
I think related to the other part of the question, though, there are policy leaders and state leaders who are paying attention to this for all kinds of populations. For example, Texas just launched a statewide initiative to build capacity to provide premarital education statewide. So people of all income groups are going to have access to these kind of services in that state.
I would just add to Mary and Jill's point, too. I mean, this is a growing field. And the whole economic piece, we've got couples coming to the room. You get the fathers in the room and say, like, what do you need? You're thinking, like, communication skills, like, jobs. So this is totally evolving to a new realm now where I think the connection between marriage and employment is going to be quite important as we move forward.
One and two and three.
Mm-hmm. Shoshana Grossberg from San Diego State University. And I'd like to ask Brian and Kendra how your parents have reacted to your participation in this program.
Oh, they are very excited, especially for me. My parents are very excited for me, by me being the only child. So, and like, they congratulate me almost every day I talk to them. So, so that feel good to be congratulated by my parents. So,
My mother liked the fact that I'm in the program because she told me I can learn more. You know, I'm beginning to be a young adult and I have a family now, so it's good to learn more about how to build a strong family.
I'm Katie Campbell with the Progressive Policy Institute. In the context of a presidential election year, we're going to have a new administration regardless. What do you advise, what would you advise the next administration if you're sitting down with the president? What would you ask them to do? Change in funding streams? What do you think the next step is?
Well, I think as we continue to look at the way in which we integrate fatherhood and healthy marriage programs, to look at that as an opportunity. We can't lose sight of the fact that we have so many men across our country who are not in relationships right now, but who have children. These non-custodial parents or fathers that I talked about, that has to be a strategy. Employment services has to be a critical element of that. We've got to look at the expansion of the earned income tax credit for non-custodial parents who are low-wage earners. I mean, all of these are critical factors, but there has to be, this work has to be grounded in what's happening in communities. And so before any policies are designed and implemented, folks should be required to get out in the community and see people and meet with practitioners, meet with families, and hear the real stories, right? We don't want to always hear what's working well, but learning what doesn't work well is also critically important. And I think one thing I would ask Patrick if he would do is just really describe, particularly as it relates to domestic violence, because I think sometimes that's discounted in terms of the diligent work that has gone in to make sure that health and safety is at the forefront of what we do in terms of protocols that are used to guide how programs work with families before they get into the program.
Actually, Mr. Otero, can you slide your microphone over?
It's a critical point. One of the things that I mentioned history-wise before I came to the Resource Center, I was at HHS and doing the marriage work on the ground. And one of the critical concerns that a lot of folks raised when we first introduced healthy marriage, healthy relationships, many of these communities, was the safety of these couples. Assuming that in a group setting, a conversation happens and there's something that's not actually played out in that room, when they go home, that it will play out. And so one of the critical steps that I think HHS should be credited for is actually making sure that all of these programs partner with the local domestic violence organization to ensure that they have a DV protocol that ensures, whether it's on site or if it's afterwards, that the program is actually prepared to respond to domestic violence. And so from day one that we made this observation, each and every program that's been funded across the country, a critical element of their program is the domestic violence protocol. To ensure that, we've had one of the leading DV professionals in the field, Ann Menard, I think she's here also. We call her the Michael Jordan of domestic violance.
No jump shot.
She's not retired either. but she has been very instrumental in helping us to set that stage in terms of domestic violence. So it's a critical element. With all of our programs, all of the couples are made aware of how this plays out as well. So it's critical that you understand that we've tried to pay attention to all the things that we're planning education-wise, but even things that can be unplanned, how we respond to those as well.
Ron, could you just share with folks a little bit? I mean, I like to talk to Ron because Ron is what I would consider a fair-minded Republican. right? But just in terms of from a bipartisan standpoint, and I often ask you to, you know, to help me think through this, how should we be guided as we look to approach this beyond this administration?
Well, you know, if I were advising the next president, if I were advising the next president, I would say we should keep doing what we're doing now. We should not expand it. We got a budget deficit. There are going to be a lot of demands on the new administration. All three of the candidates, or two, depending on your preferences, have said that they're going to deal with a whole range of issues. None of them can finance even, you know, a tenth of what they say they're going to do. So I would not ask for more. And besides that, I don't think what we know now justifies it. But it should be continued, because there's at least the beginning of a grassroots movement. I think that's really a critical part. When I talk to people at the local level and people, the leaders in the field, I think that we need to organize. Washington's a political town. We need to be organized to defend that $100 million that's going into these programs and to make sure the research continues. I don't know exactly what the research costs, maybe 15 or 20 million a year or something. A lot, it'll be almost complete within, what, 3 or 4 years? Five years. So we should keep those two things going, and the field should organize. It's going to make a big, big difference when Congress in 2009 or 2010 decides about reauthorizing this money, that Congress hears from people in the field about their preferences, and the kind of stuff we've heard here today is the most effective. I mean, you know, one couple is worth 10 Bob Lehrman. Sorry, Bob. social scientists coming in with their statistics and so forth, but couples telling what their direct experiences were and what it meant to them, that's way more important, and we should do as much of that as we can.
And I will tell you how that plays out for us on the ground. In 2010, we will have to wrap up what we're doing now unless it's expanded, and that means ramping down next year. And we're just beginning to really dig deep into what we know and what works and what doesn't work, so to speak. And I just want to make sure that was somebody else. Christian, was that you?
Found a couple questions ago about the definition of a healthy marriage. We didn't want to say that things like having a job or being religious or having good health or all those things were part of the definition of a healthy marriage, but employment and income is the number one predictor, right, in that list of the antecedents, the predictors of a healthy marriage. It's very important. It's in, right, the charts in the book.
Yes, ma'am.
I think that Alameda Keys,
Evan C.,
the Deep Parent Child Center here in Washington, D.C., which is the early Head Start program. I think that it is key that we keep forums of this nature in the forefront so that this issue doesn't die out over the next few years, because it is critical, the work that we are doing, and it is successful working in the field. We can see, right, where the marriage education and everything that we're offering our families is making a difference in their lives, and we can see that they want this type of influence in their lives.
We have time for two more questions. And let me, Carol Thompson, from the Annie Casey Foundation, it might be helpful if you could share with folks, there aren't that many national foundations who have invested portfolio in this work. And Carol, if you would mind, if you could share just with us what the Casey Foundation is doing in this area. She's going to kill me, but I can only die once.
Thank you, Joe. Annie Casey, as many...
Stand up so she can get
it. Sorry. Okay. I came in late, sorry. Annie Casey is, as most folks know, a kids' foundation. And as a kids' foundation, we realize that kids aren't disadvantaged in isolation. They're part of a family. And so as we look at how can we lift more kids out of poverty, obviously we have to talk about their parents, their communities, and the policies that support or hinder families moving to strong economic positions. So we work on system reform and systems that many poor families come in contact with. whether it's juvenile justice or child welfare. We also talk about community change in terms of how do you help neighborhoods and communities be stronger and be supportive environments for kids and families. But we also believe in individual transformation and individual decision making. And so how do you help young people, people at all ages, make good decisions for themselves and for their families? Because what we do know and believe is that all parents want the best for their kids. They may not know exactly how to get it. They may not act in the most expedient way to make those things happen. But deep down, that's what all parents want, is good outcomes for their kids. And so the research told us that, you know, kids have the best outcome in two-parent, stable, free of violence, healthy, committed relationships. And so if we know that, we thought it was important to share that with the folk, with everyone. And so, and help those couples that say, hey, look, this is a path that's unknown to me. I'm not sure about marriage, but I am committed to having good outcomes for my kids. So just like Brian and Kendra and David and Naina said, you know, at some point this is bigger than me, it's about us and it's about our kids. And so we feel privileged to be a part of an opportunity of working with Mary at the National Healthy Marriage Resource Center, working with Joe, you know, at his center, which I'll get the name wrong, and even working with Ron Haskins.
Great. Please.
I never thought I'd hear you say.
And now we have it on tape, too, so.
Good. Please look out for the next seminar that will be held by the National Healthy Marriage Resource Center. And join me in thanking all of the panelists, particularly the families, for joining us here. In
just want to give you the dates. We'll be sending you invitations so you don't have to write this down, but just to kind of get it in your mind. Friday, July 18th is when we'll be back. We'll actually be on the Senate side at the Reserve Officers Association, and we'll be talking about healthy marriage and domestic violence. And then Friday, September 19th, we'll be back in this room where Ron spent many years, and we'll be talking about cultural issues related to healthy marriage programs. So that's kind of our future agenda, and thank you for your time today.
Everybody have a great weekend.